Starwalker Studios presents GM Intrusions, the podcast devoted to Numenera and the strange.
Welcome to episode 48 of GM Intrusions, the podcast devoted to Numenera and the strange. I'm your host, Lex Starwalker. I'll start the episode off by giving some advice on the cipher system for new players. I'll also give a bit of advice to GMs when deciding whether or not to allow something not explicitly covered by the rules. And under the lens, I'll talk a bit about XP usage in Numenera and the strange. And I'll also be talking about the Strange Core Book in Starwalker Review. So grab your dice and get ready to spend some effort. It's time for a GM intrusion.
Opening segment.
I thought I'd start out the show today by talking a little bit about what I've been up to in the past week since I spoke with you last. Friday was a momentous day for me and for GM intrusions as I ran the first session of the patron campaign. So I had two players on Friday and we started the campaign. We started off in Charmond and we had a lot of fun. And I already, for the next session, this month now in September, I already have three players for that. So that is super cool. This week, I am going to be running three demos of Numenera, so I'm super excited about that. Gonna get to show some new players the game, and hopefully they'll like it and want to start playing it on a regular basis. I'm running one for the asset team in a game store here in Fort Wayne, and I'm really excited about that. That'll be my first asset team game, so that will be fun. I am also running another one on Google Plus for just people that wanted to try the game. I put a post up in Google Plus saying that I would run a game for new players, and so that's exciting. I think it's been a few weeks now, but a gentleman named Richard Punch asked some questions on Reddit that I thought would be really cool to talk about on the show. He is a new player of Numenera, or at least he was when he posted this question. And he had some questions that I think will be very common questions from players who have never played the game before, but have maybe played some other games, and kind of reveals some of the perceptions that I think a lot of players have coming into this game, and kind of highlights some ways that Numenera is different from other games you may have experienced. And so I did my best to answer these on Reddit, and I thought this would be a good time to talk about this on the show, because hopefully we are going to have a lot of new players coming into Numenera and coming into the strange, because Numenera just won a buttload of Ennies at Gen Con, and I'm sure that there are some people out there that find new games to play by looking at games that won Ennie awards. And The Strange has just launched. So those two things, I think, will hopefully be bringing new blood into our communities, which is awesome. And so I think this is a great time to talk a bit about questions that come up to new players. And hopefully those new players are listening to this podcast and will find this useful. So the first question that Richard asked was, he is enjoying what he's seeing of the setting, and he wants to make a character that will best interact with the setting in a way that he can explore the setting and the mechanics of the game and really get a good experience. And so he was asking if there were specific descriptors, types, or foci that would help him do this. So the first thing is, I don't think you can go wrong with any character in Numenera. I think any character that you make, you will be able to interact with the game in a way that you're going to enjoy and you're going to have a lot of fun with it. However, that said, if you're really wanting to get the most bang for your buck, as far as types, I think the Nano is an obvious choice. The Nano gets some abilities that really will help you interact with the Numenera in the setting. The most obvious one that comes to mind is the Scan Esoteri, which is very useful for digging into the mysterious things that you find and getting more information about them. As far as descriptors, I think the mystical slash mechanical descriptor is great for this. It gives you some bonuses with Numenera as a skill. So if you're a non-nano, this is a great way to get training in the Numenera. Or if you're a nano, you'll be specialized in the Numenera, which is pretty cool. And as far as foci, I think that talks to machines is an obvious choice for someone who really wants to interact with the Numenera, because you will be able to literally interface and interact with the Numenera, which will be a lot of fun. Another possibility is commands mental powers, which will enable you to do telepathic type things with other humans and creatures like that. Richard's next question was if there was anything as far as mechanics that he was likely to get wrong at first, and if there's any tips for dealing with these things. And so this, I have a few suggestions for that I think will be helpful to new players. First of all, don't despair. The mechanics of this game are super easy. I think this game, you could draw an analogy to chess. The basics are very easy to learn, but there are some more advanced strategies in how you apply that basic understanding of the game. That said, if there's one thing that will trip you up, it might be how you apply edge to an action. So just to quickly go over this, you can only use edge once per action. You can use it more than once per turn. For instance, you could use edge on your action for the turn, whether that's trying to climb something or move across a room or make an attack or anything like that. But you could also use it again in that same turn if you had to make some kind of defensive roll, for instance. If you had to make a speed defense against someone trying to hit you, or a might defense against radiation or poison or a disease, or an intellect defense against some kind of mental attack, you could use edge for that as well. Because again, you can use edge only once per action, but you can use it multiple times per round. And also, your edge applies to the total cost of your action. So let's say you wanted to use one level of effort, which would cost you 3 points from whatever pool you're using. And let's say you wanted to use an ability that cost 1 point, like say Pierce, and you have a 4 edge in that stat, you would do that action for free because the effort costs 3. The Pierce costs 1, and that's a total of 4, minus your edge of 4 equals 0. So it's very simple. A lot of times in Numenera, if there's a few different ways to interpret something, and one is simple and the other one is convoluted, it's usually going to be the simple way. As far as the strategy in the game, a big thing to remember is that using effort has the same effect on your character mechanically as taking damage, which is to say it depletes your pools. And the main difference between depleting your pool by, say, spending effort or using an ability that requires points to use and taking damage, the main difference between those is that the physical damage will come from your might first. And obviously, if you're spending points, it's whatever pool you're using, so it might not be might. And the other difference is your edge will give you a discount to what you're spending in your pool if you're, for instance, using effort. But edge does not reduce damage that you take. So if you have a 2 edge in might and you're spending effort in might, that would only cost you 1 might. Normally it would cost 3 minus your 2 edge. It only costs you 1. But if you take might damage, your edge does not reduce that. However, if we're talking physical damage, then armor does reduce physical damage as long as it's not ambient damage. Ambient damage is damage that comes from your environment that is things that obviously armor wouldn't protect you against, like falling or being electrocuted or something like that. So a big thing that I see new players do a lot is they are so worried about not taking damage that they will actually end up spending more, for instance, speed pool to avoid getting hit than they would have taken in might damage if they would have just taken the hit. So as you become a more advanced player in Numenera or the Strange, you will learn to kind of weigh the cost of spending effort to avoid something hitting you or just taking the hit. The caveat to this is that a lot of times in Numenera, and I think in the Strange as well, the scary part of getting hit isn't actually the damage you take, it's what comes with it. For instance, in Numenera, a lot of creatures will do something really horrific to you if they manage to hit you. They might grapple you, and now you're taking a penalty because you're grappled by them, or they get automatic damage against you, or they might poison you, or they might do something else terrible to you. So a lot of times, if you're facing something you've never faced before, it is a good idea to just avoid getting hit because you don't know what's going to happen when it hits you. And a lot of times the damage is the least of it. But if you're facing something that you faced before and you know that it doesn't do anything crazy like that, then in that instance, and if you know how much damage it does, it might be smarter just to take the hit than to spend a bunch of speed to avoid it. It's very situational. And it's going to rely a lot on how you play your character and just how you decide to handle the tactics and strategy there. Another good thing to remember is if you have a nano in the party with the scan esoteric, that character can scan a creature to learn its level. And this is something I don't think I've ever seen a player do this. And I think it's because, you know, it seems like maybe a waste of an action in, for instance, a combat when you could be attacking or doing something more proactive to just spend your action to scan. But the nice thing about scan is you know the level of the creature then, which you basically know the level of difficulty for most things involving that creature, because most difficulties will be the level. And if they're not the level, they'll usually be one higher or lower than that. So it gives you an idea how hard it's going to be to hit it, gives you an idea how hard it's going to be to avoid getting hits by it, and gives you an idea if it does something like poison or something like that, how hard those rolls will be to avoid that effect. Another piece of advice I would definitely give to new players is do not be afraid to use your XP. You can use your XP for a lot of things in this game, and advancing your character is just one of them. And I would argue that advancing your character is the least effective thing that you can do with your XP and should only be done when you literally have nothing else to do with that XP. Kind of the way I've explained it to new players before is if you're in a combat and you just made a defense roll to avoid getting hit and maybe you're about to be impaired or even debilitated, spending 1 XP to be able to reroll that, or even spending 2 or 3 XP to have to reroll it until you get a roll that succeeds, is going to do a lot more to make your character successful and allow you to continue to play that character than saving that XP, hoping somehow by some miracle you're going to survive and be able to spend it on an advancement. And another example of that is you can use 2 XP to get a short-term skill, which is immediately useful. If you have 2 XP, you can get a skill right now that is applying to what you're doing right now that will give you a step reduction in rolls that you're making right now, as opposed to waiting till you have 4 XP, which might be in the next game session, to then get a skill that can help you. I think that those kind of expenditures are especially useful at the beginning of a scenario. Like, let's say, for instance, you are going to go explore some kind of facility that's filled with Numenera. As soon as you walk into there, you could, for instance, say, I want to spend 2 XP to say that I have training in understanding the Numenera in that facility. And now you have the equivalent of training in Numenera, which would normally cost you 4 XP, and it applies to that whole facility, which could be a few game sessions. So I think you're definitely getting your use out of that 2 XP. You can also use a short-term skill to gain a specialization bonus. So let's say you're a nano or some other character and you're trained in Numenera, you can spend 2 XP to get training in the Numenera of that facility, and then you are trained in all Numenera, but in that particular facility, you are specialized. So yes, don't hoard your XP. Don't be afraid to spend it for rerolls. Don't be afraid to spend it for short, medium, and even long-term benefits. Numenera is not a game that is focused on advancement like other games like World of Darkness or D&D. Leveling up is not the point in this game, and it also isn't the only path to success. For 2 XP, you can get a short-term skill, like I mentioned, that can really help you out. Something like identifying Numenera in a complex, or dealing with a specific type of automaton that guards that complex, or detecting traps in said complex. I mean, the possibilities are endless. Those limited skills will do a lot more to further your success in the game than hoarding XP to buy a character advancement will. Also, spending XP for rerolls is very powerful. Remember that if you can lower the difficulty to zero, you succeed without a roll. So don't be afraid to spend effort on a roll that might not be super important, but that you don't want to fail either, to lower the difficulty to zero, and then you don't have to roll. There's no chance for failure. And another piece of advice I will give is be descriptive when you describe what your character is doing. Don't just say, I attack the thing. Be descriptive. Describe exactly what you're doing and how you're doing it, because this is a narrative game and a good GM will be looking for assets that she can give you. And so if you describe very descriptively how you attack that creature, or how you're going to try to climb that wall, or how you're going to try to figure out how to use that control panel, your description may give you an asset that the GM will say, you know what, since you're doing it in this particular way and you thought to do these things, I'm going to give you an asset, which reduces the difficulty by one and makes it much more likely you'll succeed. The next question was, is there anything I should really do with the build to make it work in combat? Will I be okay in the core book dungeon crawl starter adventure thing? I'm not sure what adventure he's referring to there. What will a party want me to do, and what do I need to do it? My answer to all those questions is no. This is not that type of game. This is not a game about builds. This is not a game about combat. This is not a systems mastery game. This isn't a game like Pathfinder where you need to agonize for hours over what abilities you're going to get and how you're going to build your character. You don't need to go onto a forum and ask a more experienced player to make your character for you. You can just make the character that sounds fun to play, and not only will it be fun to play, but you will be able to do things that you want to do, including combat. Any build can be effective in combat or in any other thing, because all characters can spend effort. Everybody can do that. So at tier one, everybody can reduce the difficulty of any role by one. It doesn't matter if you have a skill in it or not. It doesn't matter what your might or your intellect or your speed is. Everybody can do that. And everybody can also use descriptive role playing to gain assets on any kind of role. And also, the point of this game is not combat. You know, there are games, again, like D&D and Pathfinder, where you get XP for quote-unquote defeating encounters. You don't get XP for defeating encounters in this game. You get XP for identifying artifacts and for interacting with and figuring out and understanding other discoveries in the game, other bits of Numenera. And that's what you get XP for. So if you can get to the bit of Numenera you want to explore and completely avoid all combat entirely, it's not going to change your XP payout at all. It's just going to make it easier and less likely that you will die a horrific death before you get that XP payout. So again, my recommendation to you as a new player, look through the types. My recommendation to you making your first character, look at the foci first. Don't worry about types. Don't worry about descriptors. Look at the foci first. Find the focus that really excites you and looks fun to play. Look at the things that focus will be able to do at different tiers. And that should be your first decision. And don't worry about, will I be effective in combat? Worry about, is this a character that will be fun for me to play? And honestly, I would actually do the inverse of worrying about if you'll be effective in combat. I would look at the foci and think about, can this focus do things outside of combat? For a game that is supposed to be about discovery, Numenera does have a lot of combat abilities, and this has been pointed out before. I'm not the first one to say this, and it's true. If you just look at the focus abilities, there are a lot of them that have to do with combat, and a lot of those abilities can be challenging, if not impossible, to find a way to use outside of combat. And there are specific foci that are very combat focused and don't have much to offer you outside of combat. So my recommendation to you personally would be to avoid those foci. Find a focus that gives you a lot to do in different situations. That's what I look for. When I'm making a character, I'm thinking about, and that's why I usually play nanos or the equivalent in games, is I want a character that in any situation conceivable, I have something I can do, something I can contribute, something fun and interesting that I can do. And a character that just can do combat things, that's the opposite of that. I mean, yeah, they got a million things they can do in combat, but outside of combat, they don't have much they can do or much that they're good at. And so that's why I like nanos and esoteries, because they literally let you do things that you normally could not do, like hover up in the air or read people's minds or things like that, unless you have a cipher. And ciphers are like the wild card. You can do all kinds of things with ciphers, and that will constantly change. So I would recommend that you look at those focus powers. And if you're looking at a focus that most of the powers or all of them are mainly combat things, I would look for another focus, because depending on your GM, you may have little or no combat in your adventures. And then what are you going to do? You want to have cool things that you can do. So once you pick a focus that you really like, then you can think about what type and what descriptor that you want to play. But I really feel like in this game, the focus is what defines your character the most. And so that's where I always recommend new players start in deciding what they want to play. Once you have that focus, you'll probably have a pretty good idea if you want to be a nano, a glaive, or a jack. And another thing, you know, this is not a systems mastery game, like I said, and it's not a game about min-maxing. So don't think that you have to stack all your bonuses, so to speak. You know, if you're playing a focus that seems like it would be really good for a nano, that doesn't mean that you can't be a jack or a glaive. Some of the most fun characters I've seen played are characters that go against type and that mix a more glaivish type focus with a nano, or a more nanoish type focus with a glaive. Now, there are a few exceptions. For instance, there's a focus called Wields Power with Precision that is pretty much useless for a glaive and not much use for a jack, because that focus involves making you really good at your esoteric. So that's one particular focus where if you choose that, you probably want to play a nano. But most of the foci you can play with any of the types, and they're going to be fun. And then the descriptor is basically, how do you want to role play your character? It has to do with the personality of your character, or maybe something that your character is especially good at, or something that holds your character back. So you can totally look at foci from a mechanics point of view and look for the one that gives you the bonuses you want. But I really encourage you to look at, you know, what will be a fun character to role play, and pick the descriptor that goes with that. I'm talking about descriptors. I think I might have said focus back there. But the descriptor is, you know, something like clever or lucky or clumsy or foolish or something like that is going to be how you role play your character. For instance, my strange character that I'm playing, his descriptor is brash, and he's a glaive, and I just liked the idea, or not a glaive, sorry, he's a strange character, so he's a vector. I thought it would be fun to play a brash vector. I usually don't play quote-unquote fighter types, and so I wanted to try a different type of character. I would usually play the paradox in the strange, but I wanted to try something different, and I was like, you know, if I'm going to play a vector, I want to play a vector who doesn't sit there and think and strategize, which is the kind of character I would normally play. I want to play the kind of guy that just charges in where angels fear to tread, and acts first and thinks about things later. So I've been having a lot of fun with that. And that character would not be anything like what he is if I didn't have that brash descriptor. It really, a lot of times I will do things just because I have that descriptor, because I say, well, my character's brash, so I'm going to be brash. And then Richard asks, if I get my own copy of the core book and already have dice, do I need anything else? And no, you don't. That's all you need. And really, honestly, if you're just going to be a player, you don't even need all that. All you need is the player's guide, which is a lot cheaper than the core book, a D6, a D20, and a D10. Now, personally, I prefer to have two D10s or a percentile dice, but you can make do rolling D100 with a D20 and a D10 if you don't want to have more dice for some reason. I find that most role players have tons of dice, so it's not really a question of not having enough dice. But yes, that's all you need. Everything you need to play your character is in the player's guide. And the only other thing you might need or want would be the character options book, which will give you a lot more descriptors and foci and type abilities to choose from. But if it's your first game, unless you just look through the player's guide and nothing really grabs you as far as foci, I don't think you need it. It's just going to give you a lot more options than you probably even want at that point. And there are lots of really fun characters you can make with just the options in the player's guide or the core book. And even as a GM, all you need to start out is the core book. I tell people all the time, I'm like, just buy the core book, play the game. You know, once you play the game, then you can decide if or what you want to buy after that. But this is not like so many other games where you have to buy a ton of books and drop a bunch of money to play the game. All you need is the core book. You could play for years with just the core book. And I love that. And then finally, he asked if there's anything else he should know. And again, here, I just want to reiterate that this is not a game like D&D or Pathfinder. It's a very different animal. And if you are coming to this game having played D&D or Pathfinder or World of Darkness or any other game, you know, unlearn what you have learned, as Yoda said. Do not come into this game with preconceptions. Do not come in trying to play it like you've played other games, because it's very much different. This game is much more focused on storytelling and role-playing as opposed to character builds or combat positioning or min-maxing or things like that. Like, those kinds of things don't really matter. The only way that even comes into play is descriptively describing what you're doing and then your GM giving you assets for that. But again, that's more of a role-playing and storytelling thing as opposed to let's get out the battle mat and put our minis down and let me figure out how many squares I can move. Like, that kind of thing just is not needed in this game. I think that if you approach it with an open mind and you play it as it's meant to be played and don't try to play it like you play other games, I think you'll really enjoy it. And I think that you will find that it scratches a different itch for you than a more systems mastery game does. And I'm not saying that one is better than the other. I definitely have my preferences, but I mean, there are people that love their miniatures and love their tactical war games, and that's great. They're just different and they're different experiences. And I think that's awesome. I mean, who out there just plays one game all the time? I mean, I play a lot of different games and I would get bored playing just one game all the time or one type of game all the time. So if you're someone that maybe you just recently gotten into the hobby, or maybe you've been playing for a while and you've only played like, say, D&D or the various iterations of D&D, try this game, try some other games, get outside your comfort zone. And you may find, like I have found, that after you've played some other games, you don't even much care for games like D&D anymore, because that's not perhaps the type of game experience you really enjoy the most. We're all different, and nothing against D&D. I mean, that's the perfect game for some people. But unless you experience a lot of different things, you really don't know. And my final bit of advice here addressing these questions is, don't refuse GM intrusions. First of all, you're going to burn through XP paying off GM intrusions as opposed to getting more XP. And that's XP you can use for rerolls and short and medium term benefits. But also, GM intrusions add a lot of fun to the game. And, you know, unless your GM's a total dick and just uses them to fuck with you and make life miserable for you, they're going to be a lot of fun, and you're going to be glad that you accepted them. And if you are playing for that type of GM that you find yourself regretting the intrusions, then maybe find a different GM, because that's not what they're there for. They're there to make the game interesting and fun and to create a better experience for everyone. Okay, let's see here. I had a few other systems things for new players. Remember your recovery roles? Especially the first three, you have a one action, 10 minute, and 1 hour recovery roll. Those are relatively easy to do at pretty much any time. So it's pretty easy to get your points back. The one action you can even do in a combat or other tense situation where you're in initiative order. So use those. Also, remember there is a healing mechanic where anybody can make a heal check. The difficulty is that is equal to the number of points you're trying to heal. It's an intellect-based action. So even if you don't have any training in the skill, you can still heal 1 or 2 points pretty easily. If you're a tier 1 character, you can heal 1 point, spend a level of intellect effort, and you don't even have to roll and automatically heal a point to someone. And even with 2 points, it's pretty easy to do. Also, there are penalties for when your pools go to zero. So when your first pool hits zero, you're impaired. At this point, each level of effort you spend costs 1 more point. Also, your maximum bonus to damage from a roll of 17 or higher is capped at +1 when you're impaired. And you don't get any minor or major effects on rolls of 19 or 20. If your speed is zero, you cannot move. When your second pool hits zero, you're debilitated. At this point, you can't take any actions except to move an immediate distance per round, which is basically crawling. And again, if your speed is at zero, you can't move at all. When your third pool hits zero, you're dead. Or you're in a coma if the GM doesn't want to kill you. Anytime you use a recovery roll or a cipher or someone heals you and that raises a pool above zero, you lose those penalties. So the impaired or debilitated state is always based on how many pools are at zero. So if you have one pool go to zero, you're impaired. If you then make a recovery roll and get that pool up to 1 or more, you're no longer impaired. Very simple. If a pool is at zero, you can still use abilities with a cost from that pool. They just come from the next pool in the order. And the order is might, goes to speed, goes to intellect, goes to might. So for instance, if your intellect is at zero, but you want to use an esoteric that has a cost, the cost and the effort, if you want to use effort on that, will come from your might since you don't have any intellect left. So you could literally esoteric yourself to death if you wanted to. And something for GMs, you know, a lot of times questions come up with things that people want to do or how to interpret a rule or something like that. And we as GMs have to decide how we're going to interpret that rule. And, you know, logic always prevails in the game. So, you know, that's kind of your first thing to think about is what the player is wanting to do, or is this interpretation of this rule, is it logical? Does it make sense? But the other thing to keep in mind is that although logic prevails, ultimately, this game is about creating a fun and balanced experience as opposed to being a simulation of reality. And a clever, intelligent player can argue just about anything they want to do and make it sound totally logical that what they want to do is something they should be able to do, or that this rule should mean this certain thing. But it's not just about logic, it's about game balance. And that's even more important than logic. If you making a certain decision results in a certain type or a certain ability or a certain cipher becoming way more powerful than everything else, to where now everybody wants to do that thing, then it's probably overbalanced and you might want to dial it back a bit. So don't fall into that trap of thinking, oh, just because I have a logical argument for why this should be a certain way, that's the way it should be in your game. You always got to weigh it against everything else in the game and how it affects everything else in the game. Now, one thing that I want to call your attention to is that you can do more with your abilities than just what it says in the text. So if you check out the modifying ability section in the core book of Numenera on page 114 and 115, and there is a very similar section in the Strange core book, you will find some guidelines on how you can use, for instance, an esotery to do something beyond what it says it can do. And the example that's given in the book is using hover to raise someone else into the air instead of just yourself. Because if you read hover, it says you can lift yourself into the air, but you can spend some more intellect points and make a roll to be able to do more with it than that. But these things are always up to GM discretion, but that's a fun thing to take a look at. Scott Robinson is joining us again today with another of his strange encounter segment. And he talks a little bit about some things he's planning to do with this in the future and has some thoughts about using ideas from other games in your strange, or I would also say Numenera game. So check it out.
Welcome back to Strange Encounters. I am Agent Neil with more inspiration for your strange or cipher system game. I was called away last week to Indianapolis based on reports of a gathering of quickened individuals and don't have a full segment prepared for you today. Instead, I want to preview some of what you are likely to hear in the coming weeks. For now, I have two types of segments I'm developing. For people who are starting campaigns based on the strange, I will do short segments on various important organizations in the core strange setting. I will treat these as the equivalent of antagonist and protagonist segments for the organizations, with ideas on how to use them and how to flavor encounters to make each organization distinct. The second type of segment will discuss mechanics from other game systems that you might find useful for your cipher system game. This type of segment should be interesting for people who run any of the cipher system games, not just the strange. For example, one could easily adopt the escalation die mechanic from 13th Age to speed up combat. In this mechanic, every player gets a bonus on her or his attack rolls, starting at +1 in the second round and increasing by +1 every subsequent round. This means that all players would have a +3 bonus to attack in the fourth round of combat. The escalation die mechanic is useful to prevent combat from dragging on. Now, I don't find long combat to be a problem in my cipher system games, so I have not needed this mechanic. It was just a simple example to use to illustrate what a mechanic-based segment might include. Finally, I want to listen to you as a community. What sort of material would you like to hear short segments cover? If you want me to cover specific organizations, specific mechanics, or something else entirely, please message me on Twitter at Agent Neil, that is at @agent_NIEHL, or post in the Strange or GM Intrusions Google Plus communities, where you can find me under my civilian identity of Scott Robinson. I hope to hear from you about what you like and the topics on which you want more coverage. Until then, be seeing you.
Under the Lens, the Cipher System.
For today's Under the Lens, I thought I would talk all about experience in Numenera and the Strange. And I'm probably going to be saying this quite a bit in the next few episodes, but hopefully at that point it can become an assumption and I don't always have to say this. But in most cases, if I'm talking about Numenera or the Strange, it will most likely apply to both games because the system of the games is the same. A lot of the material in the core books is the same as far as the system and how you run the game. So unless it's something directly tied to the setting or something like that, any statement made about either game applies to both. So there you go. This includes experience. So I wanted to talk a bit about experience today. I've talked about experience on the show before, but kind of talking about some different things today, and it's been a while. We have hopefully some new players out there trying out the Strange now and maybe trying out Numenera too. So the first thing I want to draw your attention to is in the Numenera core book on page 110. And this is the rules of the game chapter. So it will be in the same chapter in the Strange core book. There's a section called Player Driven XP Awards. And this is a really awesome thing that if you're a GM, I really highly recommend that you think about using this in your game. I just had a talk with Jim Walls on the show, and he was talking about, as a more kind of sandbox GM, what he focuses on a lot is making sure that each PC has a very well-developed and interesting background. And this is something that ties directly into that, where you can take that character's background and you can say to the player, okay, this is your background. Now you have the opportunity to set some personal goals for yourself, some things that you want to accomplish. And if you accomplish those things, I'm going to give you XP for them, just like if you accomplish some story goal that I'd set for you or discovered some piece of Numenera. So this could be something like if your PC has amnesia, maybe your goal is to find out who you were and what your life was like before. And that would be something that would work great as a player-driven XP award. And you and the GM would work that out. And when you accomplish that, you would get somewhere between, say, 1 and 4 XP for it. So that is a really cool thing. So the next thing I wanted to talk about is handling XP expenditures in the Cypher system. And again, this applies equally to Numenera and the Strange. I've seen some discussion on this recently on Google Plus, but it's something that's discussed all the time. It's something that comes up all the time. So the first part I want to talk about with this, it's actually on the same page in the Numenera book as the player-driven XP awards on page 110. There's a little box called Progressing to a New Tier, and this same box is in the Strange core book as well. Tiers in Numenera aren't entirely like levels in other role-playing games. In Numenera, gaining levels is not the player's only goal or the only measure of achievement. Starting or first-tier characters are already competent, and there are only 6 tiers. Character advancement has a power curve, but it's only steep enough to keep things interesting. In other words, gaining levels is cool and fun, but it's not the only path to success or power. And this is a really important part, this next sentence here. If you spend all your XP on immediate, short, and medium-term benefits, you would be different from someone who spends her points on long-term benefits, but you would not be, quote-unquote, behind that character. The general idea is that most characters will spend half their XP on tier advancement and long-term benefits, and the rest on immediate and short-term benefits, which are used during gameplay. Some groups might decide the XP earned during a game is to be spent on immediate and short-term benefits gameplay uses, and XP awarded between sessions for discoveries is to be spent on character advancement or long-term benefits. Ultimately, the idea is to make experience points into tools that the players and the GM can use to shape the story and the characters, not just a bookkeeping hassle. So this is the ideal. This is what we want to see in our Numenera game. We want to see players spending about half their XP on advancement and the long-term benefits, which are things like getting a house, getting a bunch of shins, getting a contact, having a profession, creating an artifact, things like that. So we want to see half of the XP spent on those things. And then we want to see half of the XP spent on the short, medium, and immediate benefits. Things like rerolls, refusing GM intrusions, temporary skills and abilities, things like that. However, this isn't what usually happens. And I have run a lot of Numenera in my day. I am currently running 4 separate groups in ongoing campaigns, but in all my experience, I have yet to see this happen, and I have not been controlling XP expenditure in any way. I just give people XP and I let them do with it what they will, and I've yet to see one group of any of the groups I've run where people are spending half the XP for advancement and half for the other things. I do see players spend XP for rerolls, some more than others, but I think in all of the games I've run so far, I've only had one player, I think, buy a short-term skill or ability, only once. In almost a year of running Numenera, I've seen that happen once. So obviously, if we just let things happen organically, we are not getting the results that we would like to see. Now, one way that we can help with this as GMs is a suggestion given in the sidebar on page 111 in the Numenera book, and I'm sure this same bit of text is in the Strange core book as well. And it says GMs and players should work together to make both XP awards and expenditures fit the ongoing story. If a PC stays in a village for 2 months to learn the inhabitant's unique language, the GM might award her a couple XP, which are then immediately spent to grant the character the ability to speak and understand that language. So basically, you know, you can, as GM, if it makes sense and a character role plays learning something and spending a lot of time to learn it, you can just basically give them that short term ability and just basically say, hey, here's 2 XP. Now spend that 2 XP to get this short term skill. And again, in Numenera, at least, learning a language is considered a short term thing, because although it's not short term as far as time, it is short term as far as space, because you will only be able to use that language in a very small area. So how to deal with this? Myself, I have been kicking around some ideas, and I think a good idea is the idea there on page 110, where the in-game experience that you get, which is basically from GM Intrusions, is spent on intermediate, short, and medium-term benefits. And then the experience you're earning between sessions, which is from discoveries and story-based things, are the only XP that you can spend on the long-term benefits and advancement, although you can, of course, spend those XP on the other shorter-term stuff as well. And I think that in the future, that's what I'm going to try doing. I can see how that works. There's also a kind of different version of the same thing on page 119 in the Numenera book. And I'm not sure if this was intended to be a different version of the same thing, or if there's just an editing issue as far as these two sections not saying exactly the same thing. But in there, it suggests using GM Intrusion XP on immediate, short, medium, and long-term benefits. And the only XP that can be spent for advancement is the discovery and story XP. So that's another way you can do it. I tend to think that's actually a typo there, and they meant to lump long-term benefits in with advancement like they did on page 110. But I don't know. I can't read people's minds. But I like that way better myself, because I think that it's very likely if you tell your players you can only spend the discovery XP on advancement and the other XP you have to spend on these other things, and you include the long-term benefits in those other things, that they're just going to start spending all their XP on long-term benefits, because they're like, oh, well, I can get an artifact, you know, which I think is what they would do. You'd end up having PCs getting lots of artifacts in that way. So I think the best way to do it is put long-term benefits and advancement together, and put all the other shorter term stuff together, and say, hey, if you're doing it kind of the ideal where half of their XP is coming from GM Intrusions and half of it is coming from the discovery and story XP, the easiest way to do it is just say you've got two different XP pools, and one of them is XP I give you at the end of the session for discovery and story goals, and that's the XP you write on your sheet, and that's the XP you use for long-term benefits and advancement. And then you have another pool of XP, which is the XP I'm giving you in game for GM Intrusions, which this works really well if you're in person, because you're giving them cards or tokens or something, and you say you just keep that separate, and that you can only use for the immediate, short, and medium term benefit. So you can only use that to reroll and to refuse GM intrusions and to get short term skills and abilities and things like that. And I think that's a great way to handle it. And it will basically force your players to play the game the way it's intended to play. Now, maybe my experience is different, but I think I have a pretty good sample size considering that I run for players from literally all over the world, and players who have a wide variety of experience or not experience with other games, and that I have yet to see it really done this way. Players, if you let them, they will spend a lot or most of their XP on advancement, or even all of their XP. And I've seen characters almost die because the player refuses to spend XP on a reroll because they want to save it for advancement. And that is not what we want to happen. Now, obviously, you could just let that character die and maybe they'll learn from that. And that's probably what I would do if a player is being that stubborn. But I think you can just prevent that from ever happening in the first place by using this method and dividing up the XP and how it can be used. So again, you know, this 50-50 thing, only works if you're, you know, actually doing it so that they're getting half their XP from GM intrusions and half from story goals. So if your spread is a little different than that, then you might have to make some adjustments, or you might just have to have them total XP and then say half of it is for this and half of it is for that. But if you can do the, you know, half from GM intrusions and half from other stuff and then just divide it that way, I think that's a really easy way to do it. And I think it's very intuitive because, again, the GM intrusion XP is like a currency, like fate points in Fate that they're spending for these other things. And then the XP you're giving them at the end of the game is for advancement. And the other nice thing about this is it allows you as the GM to completely control how quickly your PCs are tearing up, because you're controlling how much XP you're giving them from discoveries and whatnot. So if you want them to tier up, you know, every X amount of sessions, that's how much XP you give them. So if you give them 4 XP every session from story and discoveries, then, and that's the only thing they can use for advancement, then you can almost bet that every session they're going to get one step advancement and they're going to advance a tier every 4 sessions. Now, hopefully at that point you can encourage them to use the long-term benefits for that XP too, but there's only so much we can do as GMs, right? I mean, we can't play the characters for them. So there's my thoughts on that. I'd be interested to hear what you have to say. And if you're someone who your players are playing the game as intended and you're just handing out XP and letting them do whatever they want and they're spending half of it on other things in advancement, then that's awesome and keep doing it that way. But in my experience and the experience of other people I've talked to, that is not what most of us are seeing. So this is definitely something, you know, we need to deal with. I think a lot of it just comes from exposure to other games, games like D&D and Pathfinder and the White Wolf games, where you spend XP to make your character bigger and stronger, and that's what it's used for. And even online MMOs and games like Borderlands 2 and stuff like that, where you're earning XP in levels. I mean, all of these things kind of condition us to that's what XP is used for, and players, I found, are very resistant to using it for other things unless you force them to.
Starwalker Review.
All right. I have had my Strange Core book for a couple weeks now, and I thought I would review it on the show. So if you are kind of on the fence about whether or not to get the Strange Core book, here's a review of it. If you're familiar with the Numenera core book, this is very much the same as far as construction. It's a nice hardback, full-color book. You have a map of the Shoals of Earth on the inside front and back cover. It also comes with a full-color fold-out or unfoldable poster map that's double-sided. On one side, it has Arden, and on the other side, it has Rook. And high quality glossy paper, just like the Numenera products. The chapters are color coded, although the colors are not the same as Numenera. I really wish they would have kept them the same so that, you know, it would translate from one to the other. For instance, in Numenera, I believe the creatures chapter is purple, and in this book, it is brown. So it'd have been nice if they would have stayed the same, but I mean, that's not even really a criticism. That's just like, if I would have made this book, I would have done it like this. But anyway, let's see. It is, how many pages is this monster of a book? It is, not counting the character sheets, it is 413 pages long. Very well bound. I can say I've had my Numenera book for about a year now, going on a year. And I use it all the time. And I have not had any problems with the binding. It's securely bound as it ever was. The Vampire the Masquerade second edition book I used to have, I had pages falling out of that before very long. And I have to say, as far as the quality of these books, if you play many Monte Cook games, many Cypher System games, you will quickly become very spoiled. This Strange Core book cover price is $59.99 here in the US. And, you know, you go look at other role-playing games, and I'm not going to mention names, but just about any other role-playing game out there, and you look at a what they want for a $60 book or what you're getting for a $60 book. And a lot of times it's, you know, not this high quality, thick, glossy paper. It's not in color. It's not bound nearly as well. I just got a role-playing book earlier this week, and I mean, I am not at all impressed with the binding, and I'm anticipating I'm going to have pages falling out of that before too long, and I paid as much for that as I did for the Strange book. It's a $60 book too. So yeah, I mean, these books are super nice. Every person I've ever showed my Numenera book to, the first thing they comment on is how beautiful the book is, how beautiful the art is, and just how high quality everything is. The Strange is the same, very evocative, interesting art in here. So I'll go through what is in the book. This is laid out. I haven't compared them side by side, but I think this is laid out exactly like the Numenera book. You start out with a little introduction by Monty and Bruce. And then part one is getting started in the game. And this is basically part one is your player's guide. If you get the player's guide, it's the same as part one in the core book. Chapter one is how to play the Strange. So, or wait, no, that's chapter two. Where's chapter one? There is no chapter one. Oh, chapter one is Welcome to the Strange. It just doesn't say chapter one, which is just a little two-page kind of introduction to the Strange. Chapter two is how to play the Strange. And this is just very basic rules that a new player needs to know to get started. Well, okay, you don't need to know anything to start playing these games. But this is, you know, if you're the kind of player that wants to know a little bit before you get started, you know, this is, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 pages that gives you the basics of the system to get started. And then part two, which is also part of the player's guide, is character creation. Chapter three, creating your character, and this explains your stat pools, effort, edge, special abilities, background, stuff like that. Chapter four is character type. So this tells you about the vector, the spinner, and the paradox. And going on chapter five. Sorry, I'm paging through this. Chapter five is descriptor. And chapter six is focus. And I definitely agree with how this is laid out as far as a book. But again, when I make characters, I always start with the focus and then go to type and descriptor. But that's just me. And so then, you know what? This would probably be a lot easier if I just look at the table of contents. Let's do that. And then chapter seven is equipment. So chapters 1 through 7 is what you're going to find in the player's guide. Then part three is playing the game. We have chapter 8, which is rules of the game. So that's your basic rules. Chapter 9 is rules of translation. Part 4 is setting. Chapter 10 is recursions. Chapter 11 is all about Earth. Chapter 12 is about Arden. Chapter 13 is about Rook. Chapter 14 is about the Strange. And then chapter 15 has a few other recursions that it talks about. Part 5, creatures and characters. Chapter 16 is your creatures, and chapter 17 is some NPCs. And like Numenera, you have some just kind of generic NPCs that you can use in your game, as well as a few specific NPCs. Part 6, running the game, we have chapter 18, Strange Ciphers. Chapter 19, using the rules. Chapter 20, building a story. And chapter 21, running a strange game. And this again is just like Numenera. Chapters 19, 20, and 21 are chapters that if you're a GM, you're really going to want to spend some time with once you got the basics down, because it's really going to tell you a lot about how to use the rules in more advanced ways and how to construct your strange adventures. And then part 7 is our adventure section, and this is a little bit different than Numenera. Numenera, we got 4 adventures. Chapter 22 is The Curious Case of Tom Millard, which is an adventure. And then chapter 3 just has some adventure ideas, some seeds and hooks for you. So we don't get as many adventures in this as we did with Numenera. And then part 8, we have our resources appendix, our appendix of Kickstarter backers, our glossary, our index, character creation walkthrough, and the strange character sheets at the very end. And again, just like Numenera, you don't have to print the sheets or copy the sheets out of your book. You can go to the Monte Cook game site. I assume, I haven't seen them myself, but I assume that they're there. If not, they will be there. And you can download a PDF of the Strange character sheet. And regarding the character sheet, there have been some improvements made over the Numenera sheet, which I really wish that they would redesign the Numenera sheet and do these things on that one. Namely, it tells you what your penalties are for being impaired and debilitated, and it has a way for you to track your advancement so that you can have little boxes to check off which advancements you've purchased on your way to your next tier. That is really helpful. They did an update for the Numenera sheet, and as far as I can tell, all they did was added a little place to put your shins. I really would like to see them update it with this stuff that they put in the Strange sheet, because that is something that players are always wondering about. What are my penalties for being impaired or debilitated? And having a way to track your advancement on the sheet is also really nice. The character sheets are full color, and there are two pages. One page is front and back, and then the other page is for other foci that you get in other recursions. And it's a really cool design where you have your main sheet that has your focus on your home recursion, whether that's Rook or Arden or Earth or some other place. And then you have this other sheet that goes over it that has the focus of a recursion when you go to that recursion. And so that sheet has all the things that change between recursions, and then the rest of the main sheet that isn't covered by that sheet has all the things that stay the same. And so that's a really cool way to do that. I was really curious how they were going to do the character sheet when you have all these different foci. And it's really clever how they came up with to deal with that. So again, this is a really awesome, well-made book. It's definitely worth the cover price. And it's a book that will last years and withstand heavy use. Like I said, my Numenera book, other than a few dings on the cover, is as nice today as the day I got it. And I've been using it for a year. I use it all the time. It opens all the time. It gets passed from player to player. And it's held up very, very well, which is a lot more than I can say for a lot of books out there. And it's just a beautiful book. It's nice when you spend that kind of money on something and you're holding it in your hands to actually have something of quality and beauty, and to not at all regret spending that much money on it.
Inspirations.
I haven't done an inspirations for a while, but after the last couple of weeks, I wanted to talk a little bit about the show Defiance. I've actually kind of had this on a list of possible inspirations to talk about for probably almost a year now, since the very beginning of the show. And I've never gotten around to talking about it just because it's so not science fiction in a lot of ways. It's very, I don't know if mundane's the word I want to use, but I hope you know what I mean by mundane in a lot of ways. And so although there were elements here and there that were kind of sci-fi that would be cool inspiration for Numenera, you know, it wasn't enough for me to feel right saying you should watch a show for these tiny little driblets here and there. But the last season has introduced a lot more sci-fi, especially the last few episodes of the season were some really cool sci-fi scenes and lots of cool alien tech stuff going on. I won't say any more. I don't want to spoil it. So if you haven't checked this show out, definitely check it out. Check out the most recent season at the very least. And it's got some really cool stuff that will give you some ideas, I think, not only for Numenera, but you could use it for The Strange as well, especially if you're talking a mad science recursion like Rook or something. Really cool stuff.
GM Intrusions wrap up.
All right, time to wrap up episode 48 of GM Intrusions. Thank you so much for listening. If you would like to reach me, you can email me at lexstarwalker@gmail.com. Feel free to follow me on Twitter at lexstarwalker. Please call the voicemail 626-LEX-GMI-1. You can leave me a message about anything you feel like. You could suggest a creature for ANP. You could leave me an intrusion. You could ask a question. You could leave some feedback. I am assuming if you're calling the voicemail that you don't care if I play it on the show. So if you don't want to hear your voicemail on the show, make sure and let me know. feel free to visit the website starwalkerstudios.com/GM intrusions. You can find lots of cool stuff there, including links to the Facebook group, the forum, and the Google Plus community for GM Intrusions. You can also find the link to the GM Intrusions Patreon page, where you can learn about becoming a patron if you'd like to support the show, if you'd like to get in on the patron campaign, or see some of the cool things that patrons get access to. Another great way to help the show is to leave a review and or a rating on iTunes. I've gotten a few ratings in the last week or so, and I really appreciate that. It helps new people find the podcast. Another great way to support the show is to sign up for a free trial of Audible, courtesy of GM Intrusions. You can find out more about that at audibletrial.com/GM intrusions. You can also look in the show notes for more information. You could get the Gene Wolfe book, The Shadow of the Torturer, read to you. It's the first part of the Book of the New Sun, which was a large inspiration for the Ninth World and a really cool story. As you know, I have the tradition of sharing an intrusion from a listener with you. This week's intrusion comes from Sutherland Stotts. I hope I said that right or close to it. After the PC dispatches a foe in a particularly messy manner, perhaps with a warhammer to the head, a droplet of fluid connects with the PC's eye, and the PC is infected with a virus that the creature was carrying. Flavor the virus effects to your taste, perhaps a loss of might edge with a daily might roll to rid the PC of it. So that is a super cool intrusion. Thank you so much, Sutherland. And something to go along with that, if you're wanting some cool virus ideas, check out the engineered viral host in the Numenera Bestiary on pages 44 and 45. That's something that you could tie in with this intrusion and have a lot of fun with. So once again, thank you so much for listening, and thank you for supporting the show. I really appreciate it. I am Lex Starwalker, and this has been a GM Intrusion.
This has been a Starwalker Studios production, your source for quality science, science fiction, and fantasy podcasts.
This episode's music provided by Ish, Cloudwalker, Renfield, and Transfoy. Please see the show notes for more details at starwalkerstudios.com.
I'm awesome!